Hello, it's Robert Bathurst here. I was one of the first guests on My Time Capsule, and Mike has asked me to tell you that you can now listen to the podcast ad-free by subscribing to Acast Plus. Details of how to join are in the description of each episode. Mike says it's very reasonably priced. In fact, Mike says it's a bargain. And who am I to disagree, locked here in his cellar? Anyway, for a small subscription, Acast Plus, My Time Capsule, ad-free. Free. Unlike me.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, and welcome to My Time Capsule. My name's Mike Fenton-Stevens, and My Time Capsule is the podcast where I ask various people what five significant personal things from their life they would choose to preserve in a time capsule. They choose four things that they cherish and one that they would want to forget from their life by burying it deep in the ground so they never have to think of it again. My guest in this episode, episode 274 of My Time Capsule, is the brilliant actor Tony Way, famous for playing Lenny, the photographer, in Ricky Gervais's brilliant Afterlife. He also played Sir Dontos Hollard in Game of Thrones and, well, to be honest, he's been in a ridiculous number of other wonderful TV shows and films. Here are just a selection. Ali G in Da House, Finding Neverland, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, Sightseers, The Riot Club, Edge of Tomorrow and High Rise. And that's about a third of the films. Then there's the telly, The Fast Show, The 11 O'Clock Show, Bang Bang It's Reeves and Mortimer, Spaced, Randall and Hopkirk, Black Books, My Family, Hardware, Extras, The Wall, Shooting Stars, Mongrels, Sherlock, Derek, Doctor Who, Not Going Out, The Life of Rock with Brian Purr, Pompidou, Inside Number 9, Murder in Successfield, Collateral, and Jiri Haji. And I have to confess that I've been choosy. Tony is the sort of actor that everyone wants to work with, and nearly everyone has. So let's find out a bit more about him by hearing the five things from his life he'd want in a time capsule.
If we do hear a toddler screaming, it's just my child having or not having a bath. So I'm out of it. But we might hear something in the distance. It's not our problem.
Yes. If you hear a woman screaming, it's my wife realising that tomorrow we've been together for 44 years.
Congratulations.
I know.
So it's the anniversary tomorrow.
Tomorrow's the anniversary of us starting to go out.
Right. Yes, okay.
Is that weird?
Yeah, that's crazy.
Which, in fact, we sort of celebrate more than anything else.
Me and my partner aren't married. But we've been together for, this is the problem when you don't get married. It's hard to remember. But we keep saying 15, but it's more. It must be more years than that. But I think that's more important, definitely. Wedding, you know, getting married is important. But
no, it's nice.
The meeting is, yeah.
Yeah, without that, nothing else.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it was 3 days before my 21st birthday.
Right, yeah.
So
yeah.
It's very easy for me always to work it out. But amazing how often I sit there thinking, God, it's my birthday soon, and it never occurs to me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was going to say, it's almost cheating.
Yeah.
But yeah, if it's still easy to forget.
Okay, Tony, let's find out the things you've written on your list and see what you treasure in life and the thing you want to get rid of.
I mean, I have not overthought it. I tried to go for the first thing I thought of.
Great.
For all five.
That's usually right, I think.
I think so, yeah. Mm. The first one is, I mean, I know it's an audio podcast, whereas that, right behind me, it's a playbill. It's a poster for mine and my friend. Should I get it?
You can have a look at it.
Yeah. One sec. I could always take a still, can't I?
It's an interesting poster because it's not quite right. So that's
Brilliant.
That's a young me, a young Rhys Thomas, and a young Steve Burge. We were in a sketch group called Stay Alive Peppy.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, that straight away, that title doesn't trip off the tongue. No one remembered it. We were adamant we were keeping it. I remember doing an interview. Bob Mortimer was an early champion of ours.
Yeah.
And I remember doing an interview for like a sort of, our agent had really excellently got us an interview for a TV documentary, despite us literally just going to Edinburgh. And in it, Bob was, it was about booze. It was about comedians and booze and him going, so this group of young lads like beer and they are called Staying Alive Pipey, and we'd go Stay Alive Peppy, and you're sticking with that, are you, lads? And we kept going. We never really got, he was being very polite, but what he was saying is that is one of the worst titles for a sketch group ever. No one's going to remember it. He was quite right, because no one does remember. We do. But it's the reason it's going in, hopefully, in the capsule is it's sort of that whole time it encapsulates being, we were, I think, 19. That was 1998. When we went to Edinburgh.
Oh, brilliant.
In many ways, it was an awful time, but in many ways, it was an amazing time too. We never did the whole run again.
Mm.
We weren't really a live act as such to start with anyway. We were involved in making videos and writing and all sorts of other things. So someone convinced us that, oh, you have to do Edinburgh if you're going to get into comedy. I genuinely didn't really know what the Edinburgh Festival was properly.
You've got to go and lose all the money you've made.
Yeah, so our agent talked us into losing money, which is not normally what they do. But we went up as green sort of 19-year-olds. But this is sort of more, it encapsulates that whole period of going from just lads in a sixth form in Essex who, I didn't even know you could work in telly. It wasn't something I thought you could do. I thought that was something you watched and I enjoyed. I loved comedy. I was a big fan, huge fan of comedy, but it never occurred to me that that was a job you could do until my friend Reese sort of got us in that world just by being sort of Reese and going out there and asking some people.
The nerve of the man.
Exactly, yeah. And I don't think I even realised he wanted to work in TV in any way or as an actor. But he got some work experience. We used to make these funny videos for ourselves. And before you knew it, he'd become friends with Bob Mortar and Charlie Higson of The Far Show and had given them these sort of amateur tapes. And there we were. We were.
Wasn't Reece on, did he work almost immediately work on Shooting Stars?
So what he actually did was he phoned for tickets to see Shooting Stars. But he got the wrong number. So he phoned Channel X Productions, very great production company, one of the earliest.
Yeah.
You know, Jonathan Ross originally set them up, but phoned through to that and got through to the talent booker who would be booking like Robbie Williams, whoever, to go on the show, on Shooting Stars.
Yeah.
And she said, no, you don't phone us for tickets. You phone the BBC box office, whatever it was. Just as she was about to hang up, Reece said, have you got any work experience? I'm allowed to do a couple of weeks as part of sixth form. And she said, yeah, actually Shooting Stars is going. If you can do a couple of weeks, you won't get paid.
Wow.
But come in and be a studio runner. So he did. He was in the office and in the studio at BBC Television Centre. Before you knew it, he was working on Shooting Stars and he was being a sort of extra on Shooting Stars.
Yeah.
He then got asked by Charlie to go and be the sort of key runner on The Fast Show, Series 3. Then he got a regular part in that.
Then he was in it, wasn't he? He played Swiss Tony's
assistant, yes.
Yeah, I did an episode of Swiss Tony.
I did as well, yeah. That was good fun. Yeah. That was great, that.
Yeah, it's great.
But then he then said, Charlie, I think, asked him, said, are your mates actually any good? And he said, well, you've seen the videos. What do you think? And he said, because we need lads to play a pop band, like a sort of Oasis sort of band.
Mm.
And there's no lines. They just have to mime a bit. So we went in and did that. And as far as I was concerned, it was like a day trip. It was like I got to see Television Centre. I got to see a TV show being made. This is amazing. And then we went away and thought, what a lovely day. What a thing to remember. And I got a call like the very next day saying, do you want to come back in and be in a suit user sketch. You'll be rehearsing all week at the drill hall. Oh. And all these words, I didn't know what the drill hall meant. Well, these are all things that I know very well now. And you'll be on. And then by the end of that year, we'd done that. We'd done similar on Bang Bang, It's Reeves and Mortimer, because Bob was a big champion of ours. And then by the end of that year, that's where this comes in. We were in Edinburgh.
Off you go.
Massively unprepared at the assembly rooms doing a show.
Yeah, they don't do the assembly rooms anymore, do they? It's a shame.
I think they do, but it's very different. I think it's I think it's also the posher stuff. What we were doing there, I have no idea. Sometimes having important, famous people backing you can be work against you. Because we were going there, we'd never done a live show. We didn't know what we're doing. No one knew who we were, and we were in this 150 seater. We should have been at a 20 seater somewhere. Mm-hmm. We were in like the poshest venue in the Wildman room, playing to 8 people, if that, sometimes no one. It was, I think we all had a breakdown but also an amazing experience.
For the people who've been through that room, you know, Cliffhanger, I remember playing that.
Right.
Cliffhanger, which then became the writers or the organisers of Mr. Bean.
Yes, right. I think the year before us, it was Matt Lucas and David Williams had done their show, their hit show, the Bernard Chumney show.
Yeah.
Whatever happened to that pair? I don't know. we were competing with them. Our show was an absolute mess. We didn't know what we were doing. We had a lot of fun doing it.
Mm.
Some nights we had an awful time. But, 19-year-olds being let loose in Edinburgh. Our show also was on if you've done Edinburgh, you'll get this. Our show was on at 11:15 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
So we were drunk. The audience was drunk that was there. It was, mm-hmm. And then we'd go on drinking after, obviously, after the show. It was
a completely nocturnal existence. Yeah.
Also, we were 19, we hadn't, none of us had gone to university because we'd got this chance to be on TV. And, you know, Charlie Higson said, you can go off and we all had degree places ready to go. He said, you can go and do that, but this is Charlie Higson, don't expect to come back exactly where you are now.
Right.
At the moment, you're in through the door. Most people don't get this far yet.
Mm.
You might want to see where it goes. You can always go back and do your degree in 5 years' time. So he gave Reese that advice. We all stupidly followed Reese because Charlie wasn't talking about us.
It's good advice,
but
I think.
But he was right. Yeah. There was some slow periods in between there, but I could have gone off and done my English literature degree and never come back to it, I think.
Well, of course, Tony, a lot of people use that going to university to get that in.
Absolutely, yeah, of course. Yeah, and I because I was so naive and didn't know anything about it and had no inkling it was even possible, it wasn't that's what I was doing. I wasn't going to go there and, I don't think, join all the drama clubs and that sort of thing. I think I would have just, I don't know, what do you do with an English literature
degree?
Not very much. Yeah, drink. There you go. So I managed to do that and be on telly. I did a bit of both.
Do you remember any of the sketches?
We had these guys. These were our stars. They were called the Billy Bollocks, or Alf and Steve Wonder, who were Essex builders based on a real man, actually, who used to say Billy Bollocks all the time. That's the Billy Bollocks. And he used to always be talking about money and nicking a few quid, and I'm not sure his building practices were the best. But we sort of based it on him. And a lot of our stuff, actually, was people that were around us. But that was their sketch was them dealing with a son who was a bit strange and a bit camp and not really knowing how to deal with it. I'm not sure. I'd love to say it was all done, you know, really well and cleverly. We were writing them age 17 and 18. We probably didn't get all the sensibilities quite right.
No.
It came from the right place, I think, in our hearts. I think we were still children.
Yeah, but at the time, all of that stuff that Paul and Charlie were doing.
Yeah, yeah.
That was absolutely straight from people they'd seen in the street or people they'd worked with
absolutely.
A few years
yeah,
before.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, loads of money and all that sort of stuff. That's just them all going in and doing plastering.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I always heard that the rumour is that the best Davros was always done by Paul when they did it at the pub.
Yeah.
And actually, but obviously, the one that's on telly gets to do it. At least they got the writing credit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Paul's voices are something else. They just come thick and fast.
Absolutely. I actually went up to Edinburgh, I think probably around that time. I was working for Granada Television and I went up to do talent spotting, they said.
Right.
Which meant I had the opportunity to go to any show and buy people drinks and then claim for it. It was one of the best jobs in the world.
Fantastic.
And I organised a party at the end of it. But before that, I'd approached Charlie and Paul to write for a show that we were doing.
Mm.
So it must have been just before that. It was just before the Fast Show and they weren't performing at the time. And I said to them, you should perform. You know, you're both good performers.
Yeah, yeah.
And they both at the time were saying, nah, nah. But I use that argument that you do, you know, you do Stavros better than Harry.
Yeah, yeah, right. I mean, the Fast Show was my favourite. There was a moment there where I was, I mean, by this point, probably 20 doing, it was during this Fast Show. Mm. But because Reese had the key to the door, he was a runner. Runners can go anywhere. They just had the run of TVC. And I walked in and I was filming on the Fast Show. Next door, they were shooting Stars. Next door to that, they were shooting Nevermind the Buzzcocks. The other side, they were shooting I'm Alan Partridge.
Yeah.
And Top of the Pops was happening.
Brilliant.
And it was all of my favourite TV shows, and Top of the Pops was on. It was like I'd fallen into the telly. It was mad.
And you could do that, couldn't you?
Absolutely.
You could just go along and walk into the studio.
And we did.
Yeah.
Secretly, Reese used to get given a dressing room as well, which is unheard of for a runner because he'd need someone to get changed because he was in there.
Yeah.
But if you had the right dressing room, you'd have a little TV with a video in it, and he'd put the ring main on and record some rehearsals. So he had some good footage of rehearsals and stuff.
Oh, really?
But, I hope he's still got it somewhere, but he had some great stuff from, he'd be in sort of working on the Fast Show recording something else.
Yeah. I was working on a show at the BBC there when Top of the Pops was on one evening, and I was playing a vicar.
Mm.
And I had the dog collar on, and that gave me license to do almost anything.
I bet, yes, yeah, yeah.
I went into the dressing room of New Kids on the Block. They turned up in separate, sort of almost armoured vehicle.
Right.
Because there were so many fans outside, and they all went into one dressing room. And then I knocked on the door as this vicar, and this bloke said to me, yeah? And I said, I wonder if I could just see the boys. I've got one of my parishioners wants to have their autograph. And he went, there's some sort of pastor here who wants to have a word. And they said, yeah, okay. And I went in and they were all holding joints behind their backs.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Can you remember what show you were doing?
Yeah, I was doing a thing called KYTV that I did.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah. Brilliant. Mm. Yeah.
Very good fun.
That is the thing. That used to be one of my favourite things about TV. If there was some comedy shows on, the costumes you'd see in that little centralette smoke, where this became the smoking area, didn't it? But
yeah,
that centre bit of the donut, you'd see all sorts of things and people going through there at any time.
Mm. Yeah.
I still love that place. It was great.
Yeah, sadly missed. Now, so we're going to put in the show from Edinburgh.
Yes.
Stay with Pepe.
Stay alive, Pepe.
See, I told you.
Bob Morton was correct.
That's just to prove that it's the worst title in the world.
I don't even remember where it comes from. It was something we came up with in a sixth form joke. I think it was written on someone's book in a class or something.
Stay alive, Pepe. I'm never going to forget it again, I promise.
No, that's that.
Having sat there and struggled to drag it back out of my brain. Well, what lovely times, though.
Great times.
Lovely to be 19 and going up to Edinburgh and not giving a damn.
Yeah. No money, but not really caring.
No.
Because I never had any money anyway, so it didn't really make any. It was nothing I could do about it.
Yeah, but fun.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, the things we got up to when we were up there were quite something. I think there were four of us in one room at one point because we had quite a posh flat because Channel X, the company, we stayed in their flat.
Oh, right, yeah.
Obviously, as the festival gets cracking and it becomes the TV week, there were people coming up who needed rooms to themselves, grown adults.
Yes.
So we just slowly got shunted into this tiny room and there were like us three and all of our friends just on airbeds. It was disgusting.
I once shared a cupboard in a flat with a man called David Jackson Young, who became a producer at BBC Scotland.
Right.
We shared a cupboard.
Yeah, that's about all you get now in Edinburgh for the money. It's insane.
Yeah, I know. But brilliant fun. And, of course, the thing is that while you're doing the show, you can hardly wait for it to finish, can you?
No.
Because you've got so many things to do. I've got places to
Absolutely,
go.
Absolutely, yeah. I don't think I've ever seen as many things in terms of art and culture and comedy in one space of time ever since then, in that sort of month or 3 weeks we were up there.
Mm.
I've been up there since to watch shows and do a bit up there, but I don't think I've ever packed as much in as I did then. Because I think then if you were a performer, you had a pass as well, so you could pretty much go everywhere.
Yeah.
So it wasn't prohibitively expensive like it is now to go and see the shows because it's not cheap.
No, I don't know how people do it. I mean, fortunately, nearly everybody who does it now goes as a one person, isn't it?
Yes, so yeah.
Performing on your own.
Yeah.
And you can just about break even.
Yeah, yeah.
But the idea of sort of three of you.
Oh, yeah. We owed thousands.
Yeah, yeah.
We were not a success. We went very quickly back to doing TV and videos after that.
Although I played the Assembly Hall and we played the Main Hall and we sold out for 3 weeks.
Wow, I bet.
4 weeks.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah. And that's because you knew what you were doing. We had no clue.
Okay. Stay Alive, Pepe, is in there.
Thank you. To be honest, just to keep that away from me as well, because I never want to have to do it again as well, but just that memory is so nice.
So what's number two?
Well, this is another harking back thing. It is my, and I'd wish I had it to hand, like I had this, it's my Dennis the Menace fan club, smart club wallet with two badges and the membership card.
Wow, you were proper.
I mean, it was the one you get. I think it was 38p by the time I signed up. It probably was 5p when it started. I think now it's probably a few quid. But I absolutely adored the Beano. It was, I think, my introduction to proper jokes and comedy, and I loved it. And I think what I really want to put in there, but I don't own anymore, is the huge collection of Beano annuals I used to have.
Right.
Long since gone. But the one thing I managed to keep of that collection, it was the fan club wallet.
It's slightly tragic, isn't it, that when you look around your life and look at the things you have kept.
Yeah.
And then you think about the thing you've got rid of. Nearly always you made the mistake of keeping the wrong things.
Yeah, I think so. And they were quite brutally dropped, those Beano. I mean, to be honest, what would I be doing with them now? They'd just be taking up some space up in my office. But so I'm glad I kept the fan club stuff, because I genuinely felt like I was in a club with it. I adored that magazine so much. I used to sit and actually laugh at, you know, I used to sit and laugh out loud, sort of shaking, laughing at the jokes. I think, I don't know, age six and up, I think it was. And it was properly, until sort of, I guess, watching something like The Young Ones or maybe being allowed to read Viz, it was probably the most anarchic thing. I mean, it's sort of, when you think about the characters of the Beano, they are absolutely insane. The lead character is just this sort of Asbo kind of mad.
Yeah, are these kids causing chaos in school?
Chaos with wild animals as their pets. It's sort of insane, actually. And they're all getting beaten, because I used to collect the old ones. Like, the idea that they're all getting beaten with slippers and canes and stuff was very much on my mind. I don't know if it made me behave better.
There's always someone with a black eye.
Yeah, exactly. But the thing itself, it was like, it was a real treasured thing, because you got two badges. You got the Dennis the Menace badge, and then you got the Nasher badge, which was a furry Nasher head.
Oh, brilliant.
And then the wallet was smart. It wasn't leather. It was plastic. But then the thing unfolded, and there were sort of secret code words and things that if you saw another member of the Dennis the Menace fan club, you were supposed to say ding. And if they knew... It was like being in the Masons. They'd say dong, which is Dennis. Dennis is never good. Dennis owns Naughty Nasher, you'd have to say. And genuinely, me and about, I think there were three of us at primary school, formed our own Beano club, we called it. And I think we sat once and we went to, what was his name? It was Wesley's name. We went to his house. He had a badge making machine.
Brilliant.
And we were going to make badges for our club. He only had one badge backing, so we made a badge that I think I took. I think convinced them that and it had badly written on it, Beano Club, Beano Gang or something. But yeah, I genuinely think it formed a lot of my early sort of comedy ideas. And just, I think it's the first thing, genuinely, I thought, this is mine. And I find this funny. Like, my dad had bought me the comic. He obviously knew it was funny, but I didn't know that. There were comedy things I'd watch with my parents, and you know, you'd laugh, and but this was mine. Only I was reading it, and I could chuckle away. And I, as far as I knew, no one else got the jokes. And then I realized there was a club of loads of other kids that are getting these great jokes about, you know, mums and dads being silly and eating mashed potatoes and sausages. And yeah, it's a prized possession. I don't quite know where it is, but it's safe somewhere.
You've got it somewhere.
Yeah, it's somewhere in the loft.
Lovely. Yes. And did you get extra special privileges? Like, did you get sent things with it?
No, I don't think you did. I think for 38 pence, we were already doing well.
Yeah.
Two badges and a thing. And the other things that were on the membership card were ways to wear the badges. Basically, it was just, you know, on your trousers, on your hat, on your jumper. Yeah. They were sort of running out of ideas by then. But no, it was a great thing. I loved it. It was being part of that gang, despite never meeting another member.
No.
I felt like I was a menace.
You're wandering around saying dong everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. And people go, what's wrong with this child?
Hoping you can bump into Leslie Phillips.
So. Yes, exactly. Yeah. When I was this age, I lived on quite a rough estate. So just going up to people saying ding and dong probably wouldn't have got me very far.
It'd get you the black eye.
Yeah,
ding exactly. Dong, I say. You what, mate? Oh, yeah. Happy days.
Loved it.
Those things that take you as a child into your own private world, they are really treasured, aren't they?
Yeah. And I've got a very, very little one now. And she can't, she's only not even three yet, but I just see her go into the corner and look at books.
Right.
Just pore over them. And she sort of makes up stories that go along to the, and you can see it. It's amazing. You do just go into your own world. And it's great that kids can have that. They need to do that.
I love watching kids do it as well. It's brilliant to sit back and just keep quiet and let them get on with it.
Yeah, yeah.
I've got an 8-year-old at the moment who's just is obsessed with making videos for TikTok.
Brilliant.
So obviously she's feeding the Chinese overtake of the world with her information, but she has great fun. And then I've got a friend whose son, she says every day she takes him into Next, I think, and he talks to the little faceless dummies. Now that's slightly that's sort of the midwitch cuckoo.
Yeah, yeah, or like a sort of pertwee Doctor Who story. Yeah. Kind of. Yeah.
But he sits there while she's doing shopping. He just sits there and just has conversations, made up conversations with them.
That's fun. Yeah. Very fun.
It's what children do.
It's no different to talking to a dolly. Yeah, it's the same sort of thing. I was thinking about the TikTok thing, and I think I think I almost wanted to put in the time capsules. I used to do radio shows. I used to have a little tape recorder radio thing that I got bought as a present. And I suppose it's the same thing, that wanting to experiment with a thing like that.
Yeah.
No one heard I used to go and play my radio shows to my poor parents. They'd be bored to tears. But now you can actually broadcast it. It's sort of crazy.
Now you'd put it straight on the internet.
Yeah. Well, it's like how the stuff that got me into comedy, we used to make videos and show it to our mates.
Mm.
I think if it was a few years later, 10 years later, we would have been YouTube stars, maybe.
Yeah.
We probably would have made a lot more money than we did through telly. But I think that it's great when kids do stuff like that.
I like the fact that it's available to them now.
Yes.
I really think it's an improvement on the world we lived in.
I think so, yeah, yeah. As long as you keep an eye on where it goes and you put the parameters on it, then, yeah, it's fantastic, yeah.
But I'm going to put your BNO membership in there.
Yes,
Dennis
please.
The Menace Club.
I need to keep that safe.
Okay, I'm going to say it to you. I'm going to say ding.
Dong.
Thank you.
Are you a member, though? Because I'm not sure that was legally allowed.
Well, I just wanted to give you the opportunity.
Yeah, thank you very much. I've been waiting a long time for that.
Okay, we've got two more to go.
Yes, I think, okay, the full, I'm going to say English, but full breakfast, a full fried breakfast.
Which is a variable thing depending on which country you're in.
Exactly. Mm. And I think in England, I think it's about as variable as it comes just within England as well, because a lot of people would argue over this. I'm not one for being sort of, some people get very cross about alterations in an English breakfast and what should or shouldn't be there.
Yeah.
I'm much more open, and I love I adore a full English breakfast. I probably eat more than I should.
Well, only an idiot doesn't.
Yes, exactly. It's one of life's great pleasures, as far as I'm concerned. I would travel for a breakfast, happily. It's become a bit of an obsession. It's not quite as much as it was, but there used to be a little group of us on Facebook who would share our breakfast pictures with each other.
Oh, right.
And then sort of, not critique them, but gently encourage each other.
Mm-hmm.
There are places on Facebook where you can get your picture of a breakfast completely slated by random strangers, like quite brutally. I'm not into that. I'm a live and let live kind of guy. But if I was to choose something to go in the capsule on that plate, it would probably involve bacon, sausage, black pudding, fried eggs, tomatoes, and toast or fried slice. I'm actually quite easy either way.
I notice no beans.
I take them.
You'll take them?
Once again, I take them.
You're not a pedant.
Yes, I'm not fussed, but it's not necessarily something I go for straight away. But I happily take beans as well. And on top of that, I'd have mushrooms, I'd have bubble and squeak, I would have hash browns. Some people get very angry about hash browns as an American interloper.
How dare they?
But I take those, you know. I like food, so I'm happy.
The great thing about being an actor is occasionally you get to stay in hotels.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, location filming, usually, if you're at the beginning of the day, you miss out on the hotel breakfast, but then you get catering.
Yeah, exactly. I had a run of photos of catering breakfast, on set catering breakfast too, You can get some really good ones. You can get some quite bad ones.
Yes.
Yeah, if I've got a run of work somewhere abroad or anywhere, just not away from home, staying at a hotel,
yeah.
I love to go and check the breakfast out. I've got a friend, James Bartman. I don't know if you know James, but he...
Yes, I do, yeah. Originally, I remember seeing him in Mitchell & Webb on the radio.
Yes, fantastic. Exactly, yes. Yeah, and writer of that as well. Mm. Brilliant, funny friend of mine. But he, everywhere he goes, I think this is right, it's either the scrambled egg or the omelette he always orders, because if they get that right, then he knows it's good.
Very good.
You know what I mean? It's like a little, almost like a little test. He also loves omelettes, so that's good as well.
But he's spent a lot of time in LA, hasn't he?
That's right, yeah. I'd say America is the land of cooking eggs. They'll cook an egg anywhere you want.
Yeah, quite.
Yeah. But I had a run of staying in, filming in Japan. So I was staying in quite a posh hotel in Japan for a month and a bit.
Mm.
And there, the filming was never too early, so I would be down for breakfast every morning. I got some weird and wonderful combinations in there. I think I might be the only man that really mixed up the sort of Japanese breakfast bar with, because by, you know, day 30, you're mixing it up. So I was having like English bacon with a load of sort of Japanese mushrooms and rice with some miso on top and an
sushi.
Egg. And a bit of everything thrown on. It was delicious. But I actually made a video of... I was posting a breakfast picture every day from Japan on Facebook. I didn't do it on Twitter because I don't want the aggro. I don't want breakfast anger. But I actually turned that into a little video with a little bit of Japanese music under it and put that on YouTube so everyone could see day one to day whatever it was, breakfast. It's quite a depressing day where I just had I think it was an energy drink and a protein bar because I was so hungover I didn't leave the hotel room that morning in time. But yeah.
It works on Instagram. I know that Richard Coles does it.
Yes, yes.
I quite like it. I think that actually seeing that in the morning, you get a sense of somebody being somewhere, having an adventure, and this is how I start the day.
Absolutely. And it gets you going for the day as well. It gets you up. And when I was in Japan, especially, I would go and have the world's biggest breakfast there and then just walk Tokyo. I would just walk Tokyo. I had a load of days off in the middle and it was brilliant. It kept me going till sort of supper time or sort of halfway through the afternoon. It was fantastic.
Yeah. And it's strangely enough, though, it's not a thing that you do at home, is it? Some people do, but I've never really, I think just occasionally on a Sunday, I might say, should we have a proper breakfast?
And it's very rarely the full thing as well. Mm. Like I might do some eggs and bacon.
Yeah.
But it's rare that I these days will dig out every ingredient. I'll have every ingredient in to do that.
Quite.
But if anyone's interested, the best, I think, breakfast in London, it's not cheap. It's the Hawksmoor steak restaurant breakfast is, I think, the ultimate breakfast in London.
Mm.
It's very expensive, but it's amazing. It's the only place I've ever seen that has bacon pork chops.
Oh, wow.
As part of the breakfast. It's insane. It's very good. Very, very good.
I did stay in a hotel once where they said, kidneys, sir?
Yes.
And I went, oh, good Lord.
Oh, yeah. I? There you're talking. Yeah. Mm. I haven't had a kidney outside a pie for some time.
No, quite. I went, no, I don't think so. Thanks very much.
I remember having kidneys a lot growing up. I mean, we weren't poor, poor, but, you know, we had like these things that now seem ancient. We would have stuffed hearts.
Mm-hmm.
Once every couple of weeks, we'd have kidneys quite a lot. Barbecued kidneys. I tell people that they make you sound like you were in Victorian sort of slum or something. No, it's just the 80s. Both of my parents are now vegetarian, which says a lot.
Probably driven that way.
I think they got sick of offal.
Yeah, I once stayed in a hotel, the same hotel, for 3 months, and I did turn into Alan Partridge.
Yeah.
Breakfast finished at 10, and I would turn up there at 10.
Right.
They would say, well, it's closed really, but as we know who you are, in you go. So quite often I would go in my dressing gown.
Amazing.
And I did get to the point of having my own plate.
That's fantastic. We used to, I used to film a lot in Maidstone Studios, which is where Vic and Bob's company were based. So,
yeah.
And I filmed a lot with them over the years. So anything they filmed, they'd do down there. So I ended up staying at the hotel around the corner from there a lot, but not as much as one guy who stayed there. He wasn't working on our show. So I won't name the show he was working on because he was going a little bit crazy. This guy. He'd been there, I think, months and months and months. Mm. And there's not much there. There's the hotel, there's the studio, and I think a Tesco's. And it's sort of it's not in Maidstone proper, it's just outside. So he didn't really have anywhere to go. And it got to the point where he got so sick of the menu, he was slightly losing his mind. He'd get drunk quite a lot at night and play the piano to everyone, play these really sad songs. And we were like, oh God, it's that guy again. But he said, yeah, he got so sick of the menu, he wandered to Tesco's and he just wanted to cook something. He really was desperate to cook something. So he came back and he cooked a pizza in the trouser press in this hotel room. And we said, what really went? Yeah, I made a mess of it. It didn't work. But like the desperation of that same menu, that same Hilton curry, Caesar salad, it was like the same five things.
Absolutely.
He couldn't do it anymore. So he just decided to ruin a trouser press.
I worked on Benidorm. There was someone who worked on Benidorm from the very first episode to the very last episode. That's 10 series, so 10 years of work, and was there the whole time, so 7 months.
Wow.
Over the, yeah, and stayed in the same room in the same hotel for the entire time.
Yeah. But I can see myself, that's the sort of thing that I'd end up doing, and I choose it because I get, there's something about, I don't know if all actors are like this, but you get a bit weird. We're all a bit weird, and you do find yourself getting into little habits, and this is why I don't go and, not that anyone wants me, but this is why I can't really go and do a big West End show, because the habit forming of that would be, I'd be nuts, I would go mad, because I do it enough when I'm shooting, where it's not, you know, the days are quite changeable and movable. Yeah, I could see myself getting into a pattern of...
No. You always go in before me through the door. Yes, no. Hang on a minute. I never step on the third step.
Yeah, I could see it all happening. Mm. Yeah.
Okay.
Did you stay in the... I never did Benidorm. I always wanted to. I think I was going to go out for a concert. But did you stay in the hotel you filmed in?
No, we didn't. No, we stayed in a different one. But a lot of people booked into that hotel because they expected to see everybody there filming. We did film around the pool there.
Yeah.
But everything else was in sets. So.
Yes. Yeah, of course. I think I went up for it once or twice, never got the part.
No.
Not to worry. I've done other stuff.
Okay. You've been all right with a few other things. So.
Yeah. But I do love a little sunny holiday filming. It's the best.
Who doesn't like a job where they say, I'm afraid you've got to go and stay in a villa for 3 months?
Yeah. Death in Paradise has not called me. I know the creator a bit. Just let them know I'm very much up for this. Surely the dream. I love talking lazy actor because it's. I love working hard as well, but sometimes you just want an easier time. The dream for a lazy actor there surely is to be the one that's killed, but they need to keep the body around for autopsy reasons, so that you're kind of there for the full filming of the episode.
Yes.
But you don't have to know any lines. You can just have a nice nap.
We've all had those jobs and they are fantastic.
I mean, Afterlife was a bit like that.
Right, ad time, unless you support My Time Capsule by subscribing to Acast Plus, in which case this podcast is ad-free. Either way, we won't be long, so see you shortly.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast. Alongside my good friend, John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Welcome back. Let's continue my lovely chat with the actor Tony Wei and find out, along the way, what else he'd like in his time capsule.
Afterlife was a bit like that. Not in that I was asleep every day, but the schedule that Ricky keeps is quite quite loose and quite, you know, you're home by 4 p.m.
Right.
And you get all the work done there, you get it done, but there's just sort of this thing of, well, we've done it. Should we go home? We don't need to keep shooting this. We've got it done. Let's move on.
Mm-hmm.
And that spoils you. My God, you finish that and you go on to something that's got a bit of action in it or something set on a boat or something.
Or, in fact, somebody who feels that they have to fill the time.
Exactly. And you go, we're working how late? And they go, that's normal. We go, oh, Christ, yeah, it's because of Ricky again. He's ruined us all for filming.
So that's good. He knows when he's got it, does he? He knows. He says, that's it. That's it. That's funny.
Because he's the writer, he's in it, and he will be doing the edit, and he's the director. Mm-hmm. He knows when he's got it. So
perfect.
And he can also micro-direct, because there's a lot of corpsing on that, on his stuff in general, mostly from him, but from everyone. So he can sometimes he's micro-directing you down to one word at a time, just so that he can piece together a scene. But because he knows what he hasn't got and what he needs, it's...
Yeah.
But you work hard, but you just get it done. It's quite an interesting way of doing it.
It's an amazing thing, isn't it? It's a lovely idea. It's beautifully done and beautifully shot. But you'd never anticipate that becoming, well, just about the most successful show in the world.
It's crazy. I think it is officially the biggest British comedy in the world, yeah, now.
Incredible. I mean, only incredible in the sense that you just don't expect it.
We didn't expect it.
Of a British comedy.
We didn't expect it at all. No, no, it's kind of crazy that. Because also, you have a lot of fun on that set, so it doesn't feel like you're doing something hard all of the time. Although some of the scenes are, you know, tricky to film and quite dark and quite sad, but you don't ever feel like you're putting in a, you know, hard shift. You feel like you're kind of doing something almost, it feels like it's light because of the way the day's going. But you do forget that we rehearse quite a lot, so it's...
But in the playing of it, you know, the playing of it is very, just let it happen.
Yeah, I think by the time we get on set, you're not quite at play level, but you know what you're doing, and you're involved. And we're all involved in the process of when he's writing it as well. He talks to us. He phones us up and says, "I've got a good joke for you," and tells you, and then he lets you come back with, "Oh, well, then that might happen," and you know,
right
to the point where I was literally saying to Ricky, "Can I be in that scene?" And he was like, "Why?" I went, "I just want to see that happen. And I don't want any lines. So you'd have to pay me more for that bit. But I really want to be there for when..."
Well, my favourite, without a doubt, I for years did a radio series with Andy Hamilton and Annette Crosby.
Yes.
And she was so wonderful. She's such a brilliant actress. But her performance in Afterlife is just one of
the... It's extraordinary.
Amazing.
Well, I got to be there for that. I was very happy with that. Oh. I'm very lucky in that show because I get to get about, not as much as Ricky. Ricky obviously gets to meet and see everyone in it.
Mm.
But doing the newspaper stuff means that I get to go along with him quite a bit to meet these weird and wonderful people. And 9 times out of 10, they're just amazing actors. You know, I think people forget how good Ricky is at casting. I mean, I would say that because he cast me, but you know.
Yeah, but no, brilliant at casting, I think, because actually he's very good at remembering that people have done good things.
Exactly.
You know, for example, I would cite Kate Robbins.
Brilliant.
Who, you know, for years simply did voice work.
Yeah,
because everybody had forgotten what a good actress she is.
Ricky had her, because I'm always... Me and the sort of the usual cast are involved, not writing it, but, you know, we're asked to be involved, which is lovely.
Mm.
So he does say things like that. He'll know. He knew that he wanted Kate to do that, to the point where he says, "Oh, that's Kate Robbins."
Mm.
Long before you could see sort of a casting director going, "Well, we haven't asked anyone yet. Okay, well, we'll go and find them."
Yeah, well, I don't think they've got any worry, though, have they?
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah, It's sort of like he does write for people. He thinks of people. And then not all every character, but it's nice.
No, I think it's very nice. I mean, I have to say, I've only met Ricky once. I thought he was charming, delightful.
He's lovely, yeah. He's a good boss.
And a number of times I've said, you know, rather cheekily, you know, he's performed in Tunbridge Wells, and I've got in touch with him through his assistant and said, if you're sitting around in the hotel, I could just come along and we could talk about things you want to put in a time capsule anytime you like.
Absolutely, yeah.
And
yeah.
To his great credit, he's actually directly replied and said, "It sounds like a lovely idea. I think I need to rest."
Yes, yeah. I mean, he's an old man now. He's getting off.
Aren't we all?
He needs to jumping up, doing all those controversial jokes every night. You've got to have your rest.
It's hard work, that, you know. Feeding the mob.
Exactly, yes. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't quite remember how we got on to Ricky, but he always comes up at some point.
No, it's all people in that position will always have their detractors, will always have people who knock them and criticise what they do. And I always think that underneath it, you have to remember these are just absolutely normal people.
Yeah.
And to a large extent, nice people.
Yeah, and also most of the time it's a joke, normally a joke, that's got people under people's skin, I guess.
Well, yes, we should move on, otherwise you're going to be...
I think that came from my Friendlish Breakfast. I can't remember what that was.
Yeah, it did.
It's extraordinary where these conversations go. The catering on Afterlife, just to bring it back to that, was absolutely delicious. They bring out a barbecue once a week and have a proper barbecue grill going on, which was very good. Very good. I always put on a bit of weight on filming.
Oh, don't we all? Yes.
No chance to exercise and lots of chance to snack.
And almost within an hour of them having fed you this enormous breakfast, somebody will be coming round and saying, I've got the lunch menu. Do you want to decide what you want?
Yeah. And while I'm here, would you like something from the cake tray? It's kind of insane. Yeah.
And people say acting is easy.
I know. It's hell.
And talking of hell, Tony, we have to move on to one thing you're going to put in there because you want to get rid of it.
Oh, I think we've only done three, haven't we?
We've done three. We've got another one, haven't we?
Yeah, I've just waffled on too much.
No, it's my fault.
Oh, yeah, it's my record collection.
Oh, brilliant.
Yes.
Have you still got it?
Very much so, yeah. I still buy. I haven't bought as many in the last few years as I was. I was getting out of hand a bit. But it's everything from when I was a child all the way through. I've got the lot. I've never lost a single record, including all of my parents' stuff.
Wow.
They passed it on. My dad's got some good stuff as well. He liked good music. Although his claim is they were stolen by a mover from one house to another. But all of his Beatles disappeared at some point. His Beatles and a load of other stuff went.
Right.
Mysteriously, and that would have been like a good box.
And how old is your dad, so just to get a sense?
My dad's late 60s.
Right. I don't know how old he is. So he may well have had the, like, originals.
Oh, these would have been, yeah. I think so. So they've gone, but I've got them all since anyway, because I can't stop buying everything. I've got about 1,000, I think, LPs.
It's a good job you got rid of those Beanos.
I know. It's a good job we bought a house as well because it was taking over the flat. Yeah, I mean, if I could, I am the master of sort of incomplete collections. I think I had like 1,000 records sounds a lot to a collector at small beans. It's nothing. I had like 20-odd Beano annuals. Once again, it's a lot of Beano annuals.
Yeah.
Not to a collector. You know, I'm quite good at having these sort of semi-collections of things.
Yeah.
But I actually don't think of my records as a collection. It's just that was how I bought music, and then that's how I decided to continue buying music.
And you don't feel the need to sort of fill the gaps?
I do a bit. You have to focus laser-guidedly on one area, otherwise you will go insane. So I became quite... I wanted all of the Beatles, and I didn't really care. It didn't have to be ultra rare and old. And I had quite a lot of it anyway, because I'm a big fan. But I just wanted the main albums. And once I had those, I bought a few extra ones. And then you go, well, there's all the stuff that they did solo. And then there's the bands. And then and then suddenly one shelf is just Beatles and Beatles side projects. And then I got quite into buying. It's quite hard, weirdly. Some of the rarest stuff is not from when you'd expect, but it's from the late 90s and the early to mid 2000s. No one was making or buying records. So actually, unless you bought it at the time, it's quite rare.
Yeah.
That Britpop stuff and all of that sort of thing, it's actually, despite them being some of the biggest bands in the world and them selling, everyone was buying it on CD.
Right, of course.
I'm a big fan of a band called the Super Furry Animals, Welsh sort of Britpop-y, but they'd hate to be called Britpop, but, you know, indie band. But there you'd see some of their albums going for £700, £800 on eBay. Whether anyone ever paid that, I doubt. But, yeah, so I got quite into that for a bit until those prices started coming up.
Hang on a minute.
I've sectioned it, though. It is like a record shop. I've got jazz section, hip-hop, reggae, rock there. There's various artists section, film score, odd, spoken word. I've got it all. Latin.
Comedy.
I think comedy and spoken word is in one chunk from memory, but I might need to split that up because it was getting a bit big. Yeah. We've got this house just a year ago, so there's things to do in it. But the first big treat we gave ourselves was to get some... We've always wanted some lovely, you know, the lovely inbuilt shelving units you have either side of a fireplace.
Mm.
We've got those. And the main thing I did was, because they normally you're shelving, you don't have it too high. We make it book size. And I said, mm-hmm. can we please have one side at 13 inches, please? That's enough room for the 12 inch and an inch above to pull it in and out.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's where they live.
So when you listen to music, do you listen to it on vinyl?
You know what? Not as much as I did because of having a toddler and I don't own enough toddler music on vinyl to make that happen. But yeah, up until a couple of years ago, if I could, I'd just put albums on.
Yeah.
And also, I feel like if I'm going to buy a stack of records, I have to listen to them. Otherwise, what am I doing? I'm just collecting things to put on a wall otherwise.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm not a sort of Luddite. I love Spotify. I wish they'd pay the artists a bit better.
Mm-hmm.
But I use Apple Music and I occasionally still buy a CD, but not so much now.
No. No, in fact, now you can pick up CDs for nothing.
I've just reminded myself that I do own about 500 CDs and they're all in storage somewhere. At some point, I'm going to have to clear them out. I just had them.
That carpenter back.
Yes, yeah. I had a rush of cold blood down the back of my neck as I thought, oh, God. But I loved my CDs, but there is something about the old vinyl. I do love it.
Mm.
I think it might just be because that's what I grew up with, I guess.
Well, also there's a way that you listen to an album, which is different to a CD. Anything where you can go, no, next, and just press a button and it goes to the next thing.
Yeah.
But on an album, that's hard work.
It's a focused listen, I think. It can be background music, but there's something about the size of it makes you think about what you're putting on. And
then also you tend to sit down and start looking at the album cover, don't you?
Absolutely, yeah. The liner notes and the lyrics and the pictures.
Mm.
That's what I used to spend all of my time doing when I listened to music as a kid and as a teenager and into my 20s. I would just sit there just sort of looking at all of the stuff. It was part of the experience. Then I suppose videos took over a bit more. But yeah, well, there was no way to watch a video in my bedroom.
No.
It was the music and that was it. Yeah. I could go down and put the telly on. But I love them. I want them saved in the time capsule so that they're not just left to my poor daughter when I die one day. I don't know what the hell. I do feel sorry for whoever has to sort of deal with my estate.
I hope he doesn't expect me to listen to all this.
Yeah, yeah.
But of course, I like the fact that it's generational as well, that you've still got your parents and stuff in there.
Exactly, yeah. And weirdly, Daisy's now got a couple of records on there.
Right.
She's got, there's a really nice compilation that's lots of old, I can't think of the name of the compilations, but they were quite famous. And like, there's a couple of Muppet songs on there.
Right.
It's really nice. Mm. She loves it.
And you've got that opportunity as time goes by to start introducing into her things as she gets to certain ages.
Yeah, control her tastes. That's the plan.
Well, I wasn't thinking it necessarily in those terms.
No.
Yeah.
But yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But they're mostly mine and no one else is allowed to touch them. It's the truth. my lovely, lovely records are all in order.
Yeah. I read the other day that for the first time for many years, vinyl outsold CDs.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. I think that's right. I don't buy as much new stuff. I do buy it, but I'm a sort of secondhand record collector, really.
Mm.
Nothing like... there was a point where I lived in very hip and trendy Hackney and I would go on a Saturday, if the timing was right and all these things collided, I would go to Broadway Market and there's a little indoor record shop there. I would go to the record stall on Broadway Market.
Mm-hmm.
I would then go down to the top of Columbia Road where there was a new record shop that sold American imports. I'd spend a lot of money in there. Two record shops on Columbia Road, then cross over and I'd be on Brick Lane, three record shops on Brick Lane, including a stall. And then you'd be at Spitalfields. And if it was the right day, the record fair was on.
Oh.
And that would take me 8 hours. I could do that. Yeah. And end up in the pub with friends.
Oh.
That's another part of it, to be honest. I've got a few friends. We haven't done it for a while. I think lockdown knocked us out of doing it a bit, but we'd meet up at Spitalfields and buy a load of records, go to the pub, have a few beers and just show each other what we'd bought and just talk about that and have some fish and chips or something. It was a genuinely lovely, very middle-aged sort of old fart's day. But we loved it.
When I was a kid, when a new album came out, we would gather at the first person to buy its house and we would all sit and listen to it.
Right.
And that's a strange thing. You listen right the way through one side and you listen right the way through the other.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's the thing that we don't do so much now. Like, I can't remember the last time I sat and listened to a new thing with someone.
Mm.
Even when we have these record buying days, we'll then go to the pub and have a drink and talk about records, but we don't all sit and listen to them together anymore.
And of course, you didn't hear the record that this is a weird thing. I can't quite work out when that changed. That actually, you only heard the record when it was released. Mm. They didn't pre-play it on the radio.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Now,
yeah.
for months and months, a song yeah. would be played and played and played, and then it's released, yeah. and then it goes to number one.
Yeah.
Whereas they used to release an album or release a single, and the day it was released, it was played on the radio. So, in fact, if you went out and bought it that day, you would be listening to something you'd never heard before.
Yeah, that's crazy, isn't it? Yeah, mm. I think the only time I ever do that now, really, is buying stuff at record fairs, because you don't know necessarily what it is, and you
no.
haven't necessarily heard it. I mean, I could probably check it out somewhere.
Mm.
But I quite like that bit of mystery. What's this going to sound like?
But I remember going into town with a mate of mine. We bought a Night at the Opera, Queen, and
yeah,
came
yeah.
back and listened to it in his house because his parents were out, so we could turn yes. it up loud.
Yeah, yeah, that's
and
great.
We'd not heard any of the songs on it.
No, yeah, it's a good album, that.
Great album.
I was done to death with Queen by my very good and close friend, Rhys Thomas. He is a Queen fanatic, and he used to make us listen to a lot. I like Queen. That much Queen can put you off a bit.
Enough with the harmonies.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, what a lovely thing to own. I have to say, rather shamefacedly, that I got rid of a load of albums because we had a shop nearby, a bottom of my road, basically, that dealt with secondhand albums, and I thought, they're just sitting there.
They're fair
I don't
enough.
Play them. I got to the point where I didn't have anything to play them on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But that's fair enough. I mean, it's if I don't start playing them properly again within the year, I would start thinking about maybe trimming it down.
Mm-hmm.
But I intend to play them a lot more, whether my toddler likes it or not. She will listen.
Well, they're all there. They're all safe in the time capsule. So that's
fantastic.
That's the four things we're going to put in the time capsule that we're going to keep safe. We're going to put something now that you want to put in there so you can forget it.
Now, you're either going to jump at this and agree, or you're going to say, that makes no logical sense, you'll never work again. I want to put castings into the ground and never have to do one again in my life.
Right, yeah, fair enough. Yeah, let's go down together. Come on, let's go down in flames. Why not?
I really enjoy them once I'm in there.
Mm.
No, actually, that's not true. I sometimes really enjoy them when I'm in there. Sometimes it's awful too. I can't think about anything else before a casting other than the casting.
Mm.
There's some people just get on with their day and don't think about anything else and will have, I mean, I have to do that, obviously, but I know in the back of my head, I've got casting coming up. You know, what's the worst thing is I've got a casting and it's a massive speech and it's in a, I don't know, a Norwegian accent. that's basically all I can think about.
Yeah.
And you know what? I oddly do okay out of castings. I do okay. And that it might be my hate and dread of them that makes that happen.
Maybe the preparation then.
Because I'm always thinking about them up until the second. And then the second it's over, it's the best feeling. And actually, you know what? The minute I go in there and say hello, it's the best feeling ever. And it's not nerves. It's just this sort of little itch that I can't scratch of, I've got a casting. And I'd rather almost be told the night before that I've got one than a week before. I know you get to prepare and everything, but a week of thinking about it.
Yeah, yeah. Always... Tony, come now, quick. We've got a casting.
Yes, great, fine. So little is expected of me if you've asked me this late. I will be there. That's the dream. This is such a rarefied thing to complain about, that all these bloody castings I keep getting asked in for.
I'm happy with the breakfast, but I hate the bloody castings.
Yeah, there yeah.
I think that sums up the life of an actor, though.
It is that, and it's not the casting itself, because they're always lovely and they're always fine. And I've had some bad ones, but not for a very long time.
Mm.
But it's that, yeah, it's that sort of waiting to do them and sitting in Leicester Square just sort of going, oh, just mumbling to myself.
I always feel the pressure that I've been to a few where I've walked out and thought, oh, you really cocked that up. You really did that badly. Why did you do that so badly? And they stick with you.
Yeah.
Even if it wasn't what they wanted, you should have at least gone in and done what you wanted.
Quite, yeah. Most people who don't have to go to auditions, I think the only way you can describe what it's like is, I mean, it's like doing a job interview every week.
Yes, or quite.
Imagine all that pressure of trying to get a job, but you're just doing it all of the time.
I once talked to a man on the train going into London, and he looked very nervous, and I said to him, "You're right?" And he said, "Yeah, no, I've got a job interview." And I went, "Oh, right, okay. Are you unemployed at the moment?" He said, "I am. I've been unemployed for 2 months." I went, "Oh, right." He said, "And I've been for two others and I didn't get them." And I said, Yeah, I'm going into town for a job interview. And he went, oh, right, what do you do? I said, I'm an actor. He said, oh. I said, yeah, it's my fourth this week, and I didn't get any of the other three.
Yeah.
It's a very different attitude, isn't it?
Yeah. I think it's the hardest part of the job, personally. I think it is the not working, the promise of work that may or may not be there.
Yeah.
It's kind of... And I also always invent 1,000 excuses in my head why I can't go straight away. Every time I'm offered a job, it's like, well, I couldn't possibly. After spending, like, you could be out of work for 6 months, and the minute you get an offer, you go, well, I couldn't do that. What are you talking about? It's just, it's so weird. My brain, I think actors' brains for that sort of stuff, it's kind of... Yeah, it's odd. But once, like I say, I've nothing against casting directors. They're all lovely. And the actual casting itself is normally okay these days, although I had some shockers. When I used to go out for ads more in the olden days, you'd walk in and there would be, it's always a corridor, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a load of seats on each side. And I'd walk in and 9 times out of 10, it would be 10 blokes that look exactly like me on one side and 10 really skinny, short blokes on the other side. It'll be like, oh, it's fatty and skinny again. Okay, right. Yeah. And I never got them. I was always, I don't know if I just, my disdain couldn't be. I think I got like 2 adverts the whole time.
I've got this very strange experience now in later life that I keep bumping into actors who tell me that in the days when we used to go out for lots of adverts when we were younger, that they used to sit there and then I would walk in and they would go, oh, shit.
Really? Yeah.
And I said, why? And they said, well, we all knew you were going to get it.
Right.
And when I look back at it, I was bloody good at getting adverts.
Yeah, yeah. I could never figure the formula out. I could get parts.
Mm-hmm.
I could get parts in shows all day long, films, adverts. I really struggled. I think also there's something, as I've always been overweight, that it does limit you with adverts because most brands don't really want a fat guy being the face of their thing. So you can kind of be the funny bloke in sometimes, but it limits it quite a lot. I went out for loads of booze, beer adverts, and actually the beer companies go, well, we don't want people to think our beer makes you fat.
No.
And you go, well, of course you don't. Why would you?
And if you've done one, that's it.
Yeah.
You're not going to do any more.
But I was doomed to failure with loads of them. I got some. I got a run of them where I got them and it, for some reason, didn't work out. And one of them was a beer ad.
Mm.
And they cast me. They didn't realise I was under 21. So that I got that and lost that. And then I got one for a car that was going to be a lovely ad to do. And it was all filming in Tuscany.
Yeah.
And I got a personal message from the director saying, he can't wait to work with you and all this stuff. And I was looking at the script thinking, this is going to be like an hour's work over this whole week.
Yeah.
This is going to be amazing. And just as a sort of, I had a lovely conversation with the agent, and just as a passing thing, she said, so get your passport ready. And I went, oh, I can't remember the last time I updated my passport.
Oh, no.
Rushed home, out of date by a month.
Oh, my God.
Absolutely no chance of getting a new one before flying out to Tuscany to film, and it went before my eyes.
Oh,
I mean, now
God.
It's, you know, I'm over it, but
yeah.
It was like a year of going, I could have really done with that money and a visit to Tuscany.
Oh, I have done that. I've cut it fine like that. That happened to me once, and I did go and queue up a Petit France.
Right, yeah.
And got it done in a day.
Yeah, they wouldn't let me for some reason. I couldn't do that, and it would have had to have gone to Belfast.
Oh, my God.
To get a passport, and it just wasn't going to happen. It wasn't going to work out. You know, it was all going to be a nightmare. But like I say, I'm quite good at castings, and I quite enjoy them when I'm in there, but I wish I didn't have to do them. I wish that I could just get the parts.
I'm happy to put them in there because we've all had nightmares.
Yes.
I look back at my younger self and think, why didn't you learn the lines better?
Yeah, oh, absolutely, yeah. I've been into them right... in the past, where I now look back and go, the conceit. Like, what do you, why didn't you just learn it?
We
had all day to at least have a go.
Yeah.
That's one thing I do now. I do learn it a bit. I mean, because of the American influence now of filming, you kind of have to do that, don't you?
Yeah.
It's a different ball game now.
Yeah. Mel Smith, a long time ago, told me that he was casting for a film and all these major Hollywood stars were coming up for it. And it was period costume and Michelle Pfeiffer, they said, is outside and would like to see you. And he said, well, we haven't called her. And they said, I know, but you really should see her. And so they said, okay. And she came in and she was in full period costume.
Wow.
And had learnt the entire script.
That's insane. That's crazy. I mean, she really wanted that part.
She really wanted
or
the part.
Or maybe she didn't. Perhaps she just did that for all. That was just...
Maybe that's why she succeeded.
That's the drive. Yeah, yeah. I remember going up for the LEG film, which I got. I didn't realise they'd cast me about five castings before.
Oh, no.
But they kept bringing me in because they were trying to find the part that Martin Freeman got in the end. They were trying to find that guy. So I kept coming in. And then one day I went in there and, yeah, a guy had turned up dressed as like a blue Ali G, because in the film there's like a yellow gang and the blue gang. And he sort of, he obviously couldn't afford it, but he had cut out like Nike swooshes and feeler things and stuck them, printed them out, stuck them all over him. And he was in character in the...
Wow.
I don't think he got a part in it. I think it didn't quite work the same. Yeah.
Maybe that's the difference between an English casting and an American casting. They like that sort of commitment, I think, in America.
Yeah, this was a little bit embarrassing.
But as we go, hang on a minute. No. Yeah. I turned up for a casting once where they were looking for somebody who looked a bit like Sherlock Holmes, and a man in full deerstalker pipe, the lot, sitting in the waiting room.
Yeah.
And I thought,
You can do it subtly, though, because I do, if the character's supposed to be a bit smart, then, yeah, comb your hair, and you don't have to go in a bow tie, but, you know, it's probably go in, you know, not in flip-flops and whatever.
Quite.
And now I'm talking myself around. I enjoy casting. Maybe I should keep the castings back out. I'm quite remembering how much fun they can be.
I'm going to put that feeling in, that feeling that you have before you go in,
that
dread. And we'll put that in there and it's going to disappear. And castings from now on will be a breeze.
But not the work. I want to keep the work.
Keep the work, yeah. Keep the castings coming. Thank you very much. And how lovely are all casting directors? We're very fond of them.
They are the best bit about the whole process.
You lying bastard. Tony, how brilliant to talk to you and to meet you, actually.
You too. I'm amazed we've never crossed paths.
So am I.
Because we've both worked on everything, so between us. Extraordinary we've never crossed paths.
The chances are, next week we'll walk into a casting.
Exactly.
And hopefully you'll go, oh, fuck, not him.
Yeah.
Tony, keep well. Lovely to see you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Cheers. Nice to meet you, Mike.
You have been listening to My Time Capsule with me, Mike Fenton-Stevens, and my guest, Tony Way. Thank you very much for listening. Now, please do subscribe, rate, and review this podcast, which won't take long, I promise you, unless your review is, of course, in novel form. And feel free to join me and My Time Capsule on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook for plenty of My Time Capsule stuff, and, in my case, grandkids and the odd political rant, nearly always followed by an apology. It's also the best way to get in touch with us, in fact, to find out what's coming up and to suggest possible future guests you'd like to hear on My Time Capsule. We always like to hear from people, so please do that. If you enjoy the theme tune to My Time Capsule, then you can download and stream it on Spotify by searching for Past the Peas Music. I haven't the faintest idea what I'm talking about. Now, if you want to hear this podcast ad-free, then follow the link in the description of each episode to subscribe to Acast Plus for a very small monthly fee. This was a cast-off production for Acast, and it was produced by John Fenton Stevens. Right, I shan't waste your time with one of my ridiculous jokes or rambling stories or even a song. I'll let you get on with your day and cheer you on the way with a thought from the comedian Andy Field, who said, "I like to imagine that the guy who invented the umbrella was going to call it Umbrella, but he hesitated." I hope that keeps you smiling as you go about your business, unless, of course, you're an undertaker, in which case it might look a little bit weird. Keep well. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.